Welcome back to our series In Conversation With. We're exploring the lives and careers of people across Elgium to understand more about what brought them to asset management. This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Joining us today is Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy and Research. Prior to this, he held the role of Head of Credit Strategy and joined Elgium from Lehman Brothers in 2008.
Hi there, yeah, Mark. Pleased to be here.
Thanks very much for joining us, Ben. So, at the very basic level, what is investment strategy and research? It's a job that could describe almost anything.
Yeah, I guess it's fairly ambiguous in the title. So what we do, we're quite a top-down sort of strategy team across the whole of Elgium. So that means that we're trying to think of big long-term ideas, big things that might be driving markets rather than, you know, watching for the next up or down in the FTSE 100. So we're trying to think of long-term big picture things. So my job is to be sort of chief gossip on those big long-term themes and corral, get together all the experts across all the different teams. So we obviously have a equities team, a bond team, a multi-asset team. Get together all the experts about what we consider to be the key topics for markets, get them in a room, debate them, try and work out what we think is going to happen, try and think what that means for markets now, but also what it's going to mean for markets in 5-10 years, because a lot of people who are investing money with us really care about that long-term stuff. So it's that. My role is that sort of, as I say, chief gossip and coordinator of these long-term macro themes.
So you're taking together a lot of disparate views from across the business. Yeah. How much do external, I mean, we as an asset manager, we receive a wealth of sell-side research, as it's commonly known, from investment banks saying, this is what you should be thinking about, these are the big themes. How much do those play in your day-to-day role?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of filtering. I mean, there's a lot of filtering anywhere, and there's to be frank, there's a lot of filtering
It's an avalanche of content.
And a lot of it's noise. I mean, you can just listen to Bloomberg TV 24 hours a day if you want, can't you? And you hear lots of experts talking about stuff. So we have to filter. We have to get the really good stuff. I mean, we believe that we've got some really good people at Legal & General thinking about these topics. But we also know great experts, and we talk to, as you say, investment banks. We also actually talk as well to individuals, maybe independent research boutiques who've got maybe slightly different views that can be maybe even more independent, because you are constrained a little as an investment bank. It's very hard to find a US equity strategist at a US investment bank who says the US markets are going to go down. So, you also have to find maybe you've got to know what people,
right,
people's biases. Yeah, but we do involve all that, but with a big filter, I guess. Mm.
So to take this back more to you personally, did you study finance at university? Is asset management really where you wanted to be?
No, this is totally by chance. I did maths at university, which is pretty much useless in everything you do. I think the most maths that you do at in finance is sort of GCSE levels, so totally useless. But when I was, as a mathematician, the best mathematicians are lazy because they're trying to find the easiest solution to things. And
as a humanities subject, I'm going to stay very quiet on the subject.
Well, okay, but maybe you had to write long essays and things. But if we could solve something in two lines rather than three pages, we'd do the two lines. But anyway, as a lazy mathematician, we just had loads of finance people coming to university to sort of say, why not apply to us? Yeah. And actually, all my friends were economists, and they were all applying. So I thought, well, I'll just throw my hat in the ring. But the problem was, I guess, that I didn't know a huge amount about finance, economics, just what the economists were telling me. So it was pretty tricky. I had interviews at all sorts of places, and it was basically, as with everyone, the final interview when I was about to give up gave me a job. But when I started it, this was at a German bank, Dresdner Kleinmut Benson, started doing credit strategy. I actually found really luckily that I enjoyed it. It's the, as I said before, it's a sort of looking at whatever is interesting, sort of not the gossip nature of it, i.e. trying to talk to lots of people, finding out what they're thinking about.
It's really corralling a lot of information.
Yeah, that part of it I really enjoy. So doesn't have to be about finance. I could do that anywhere, but it just so happens that
it so happened that finance really piqued your curiosity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, as I said, it didn't pique my curiosity to start with, but it does now.
It does now. That, well, yeah, of course, as a head of research and strategy, it kind of has to. So you went straight into credit strategy in this bank. Well, what propelled you to, you know, progress within that stream, as it were?
Yeah, again, totally by chance. I applied to fixed income because I thought it was mathematical, but as I said, it's not really mathematical. You just have to present value of, you know, a set of cash flows. So it's pretty simple.
Tell that to anyone who's tried to calculate modified duration. I think that's disagree with you.
Well, okay. Well, we'll agree to disagree. But I didn't do equities because equities at the time in the late 90s was all about, you know, pinstripe suits and selling stuff. Credit at least felt as though it was something new people were looking at. I mean, I was doing European credit. The euro only just started at that point.
Okay.
So, you know, we were looking at credit indices, trading bonds. There wasn't really anything like that outside of the US. I mean, Lehman had a big US index, but we didn't have anything in Europe about, you know, pricing bonds. We didn't really know where they were. So I was involved in forming indices of credit prices for an index that was, say, 10 euro denominated bonds at the beginning and was growing by 10 every month, putting in a new bond manually, spreadsheets, all that. So it felt a bit sort of Wild West in terms of exciting. But not, you know, not Wild West in terms of lack of regulation, but sort of exciting. This is a new thing that we're trying to do. And, it, you know, it sort of took off from there. And every time I found that within credit, it's the center, I think, and it still is now, of whatever is going on in the world. It sort of is applied to credit markets pretty great. I guess it's what firms and countries, it's how they can borrow money to invest. So it sort of really matters for everything.
Everything kind of starts with credit in that sense.
It has done throughout the last 20 years that I've been working. It's always felt as though we've been the centre of all crises. So it's been interesting, at least.
Why? So Europe in particular there, did you expand that? Did you really specialise in Europe? Or did after the late 90s, did it become more global in your view?
In terms of what I was doing, no. Mm. I mean, I was always looking at European credit because it's always been a big US business. Yeah. They've been much more commoditized. I mean, they've been going for decades earlier. So we were sort of catching up always. Okay. And I was, you know, looking at European credit indices, talking to credit investors. I moved to a couple of different banks, latterly at Lehman Brothers, as you said. But always doing the same thing, sort of European credit and various crises, as I said.
But so I'm so glad you mentioned that because I feel like this is a big part of, you know, financial history now is Lehman Brothers and the crisis. I mean, what was it like, to put it so bluntly?
Well, so I was a bit lucky in the sense that they shut down my department before they went bust. So I was in that good position where I was actually leaving Lehman Brothers before the whole thing properly collapsed. Frankly, I was able to get a job. Mm-hmm. And that's when I moved over to Legal & General Investment Management. But at the time, you could, even when I joined, so I joined Legal & General in May and Lehman went bust in September. So over that summer, I was pretty convinced that Lehman wouldn't go bust. I mean, the people running the business, running the bond desk, are really high quality people, particularly after I left, really high quality people who are knew what they were doing. To be honest, it could have been any one of a dozen banks that went bust. Lehman was just the one in the wrong place at the wrong time and was allowed to go bust by US policymakers. And then the week afterwards, they saved Merrill Lynch, AIG, a number of different banks because they realised that this was going to go to
It wasn't just going to be badly. Just Lehman Brothers.
So it wasn't about Lehman. It was just that they were in the papers, people taking the stuff. And, you know, people who then got made redundant after that crash were in a slightly more difficult position if they didn't get moved to the new banks that took them over because, you know, and no one was hiring. So, like I said, I was lucky. It's always good to be lucky.
So that would be about your 10th year, but thereabouts, a bit more than a decade having been in the city. I imagine going through something so big as working at Lehman Brothers at such a tumultuous time would have really shaped your views on the market, on credit. How has the next 10 years of your career from 2008 to 2018 really been informed by, you know, being on this Bond desk, and as you say, it coming as a surprise to much of the many of the people who work there.
Yeah.
How have you applied a lot of that to your work as credit in credit research and strategy here today?
Well, yeah, I think the first 10 years of doing anything really, you're trying to work out what's going on. You're sort of learning the toolbox almost. Yeah, you're a carpenter. You're trying to work out what the chisel does, what the hammer does, and then only after 10 years, you can now build a table.
What I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
How it all works together.
So I don't know if working for a company that went spectacularly bust made me necessarily bearish, but but just seeing how in the 10 years following that I've been working at Legal & General, just having always looking at really debt and credit and borrowing and how that has expanded hugely and not allowed countries to increase their productivity. Yeah. They're still struggling really from a growth perspective, trying to work out what does that mean? What are we actually doing here? What is lending to companies? Really trying to think deep into that. Mm-hmm. That has framed more my view that there is something structurally not quite right about the way that we work with credit and invest, rather than I worked at a credit business that went bust and therefore all credit is bad. That's
exactly but I imagine that many people could have taken that view coming out of it, going, well, really credit is not where you want to be, considering the propensity or the danger of it going wrong.
But I
feel like it's very interesting that you've taken a not uber bearish, but quite a bearish take on, let's try and understand what are the fundamental drivers. And I guess that informs a lot of your position now as looking at the strategy as well as the research.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, what are we doing in finance? We're trying to match borrowers and lenders, and that's different forms, right?
Yeah,
so
of course.
Companies are trying to borrow stuff, and then savers are trying to lend. So pension funds, individuals within those pension funds are trying to lend. It's just that we can't, take an individual pension fund holder and get them to buy a slice of debt from Marks and Spencers. That just doesn't happen. So we're basically grouping lots of pension fund holders together, and then we're grouping lots of corporate bond borrowers together or countries together. We're trying to work out what the best price of that debt is. So what's the best, what's the lending rate that Marks and Spencers needs to pay, the interest rate to the pension holders? That is at the end of the day our job. Nothing sort of cleverer than that. But when you see, interest rates keep going down and down and down, and policymakers who are always looking at cutting interest rates and increasing quantitative easing is the only answer to anything that goes wrong in the world. You start. Well, something's not quite right there. You're negatively impacting what should be like a market force. Mm. You're actually suppressing something, and if you suppress something, something pops out the other side, and that's
exactly it's not
productivity.
Without cost.
Yeah, exactly. So that really is my framework for what seems to be what's going on. I think.
So you've described it in wonderfully simple terms there. Are those the sort of terms that you would use to a friend outside of finance? Going out to the pub on a Friday night, and someone said, "Oh, how was your week? How was your day?" Or even as simply as, "What is it that you do?"
Yeah.
What are the sort of terms that you would use to explain
role? Exactly that. It's we're trying to match the pension fund people with money that want to lend some money to the people that need to borrow. That's all we're doing. Everything else is noise. And okay, so my job is to try and work out whether or not something's going on good or bad in the world that could impact that lending rate up or down, and trying to get ahead of someone else who's trying to do the same sort of work. So there's all sorts of trying to analyze stuff, trying to think longer term than other people, trying to get in before the price changes. But at the end of the day, we're just trying to make that lending rate the right. And we're a market, and we're trying to use market forces to efficiently get that lending rate the correct level.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Would that go for the asset management industry as a whole? Do you see that role extrapolated to all asset managers?
Yeah, of course. The whole industry. A salesperson, an investment bank, they're trying to facilitate that. In analysts at an investment bank, fund managers. That's ultimately what we're trying to do. Now, we set ourselves goals in terms of trying to outperform the benchmark and an active investment manager. Mm. We try and do that as an incentive, but that incentive is therefore to try and get the best sort of mental capacity and analysis on something to try and make sure that that interest rate is the right interest rate. So that's all it is, just incentivizing that.
And in your role as head of investment research and strategy, you are in quite a powerful position to decide that on behalf of Legal & General Investment Management's investment team. Do you see that as the key advantage of your role, to be able to say this is the way we are as an industry, as a business, as a team, and these are the inputs, and ultimately these are the outputs that should be? Is that what really appeals to you out of your role?
So, I mean, I've got strong views, as you can sort of tell from what I was saying earlier, but it's not that those views, as, you know, ahead of anything, that's not the views that are then taken by rule by anyone.
So there are many people
exactly
my decision power.
Of course, my job is purely to chair those meetings and to make sure that we're looking at the right things. I guess that's the way that I would say it. So my power would be to assign the resources to what we consider to be the right. But again, the right themes are not my decision. I sort of make sure that I work out what other people think are the right themes as well. So it's I'm talking myself out of a job a little here. But you know that's a coordination role. That's how I would say it.
But that appeals to your innate desire to collate as much information as possible, which goes back to your beginning of your career of within the framework of what do you have to look at, looking at all the different things, all the strings that you can draw in, in order to get a fuller picture.
And look, I think a lot of people overestimate their job and what they're actually doing, particularly in finance. You know, I come on board.
We are an industry of
superstars, exactly, the sort of God complex and all that sort of stuff. And they get beyond what they're actually doing, and they try and overcomplicate things. And that's when you get inefficiencies in markets. And from a purely selfish point of view, my role is to help Legal & General successfully manage better than the benchmark, better than our competition. Mm. And therefore provide better solutions for our clients. So if we're trying to do stuff better, I need those inefficiencies. I need other people to do this, I think, incorrectly, and us to do it better. And I think that that exists. So I think you've got to have a simple philosophy. What exactly are we doing it better than other people? And then that's how we'll be successful. That's really my job as well.
Do you see what does the future hold for Legal & General Investment Management, also asset management in general, with such a driving force of this is how it's always been? What needs to change, or what do you see changing?
Well, I think
in the way that clients and investors look at the world.
I do. So I was thinking about this recently, and because we've had various sessions thinking about how technology impacts investment management, and a lot of people are talking about technology as, you know, trying to get big data, so getting all this data, trying to work out what that means for markets ahead of other people. But everyone's got a computer, so I'm not convinced that you're going to have a better big data analysis than the next investment management company in the next year or so. I think what technology will allow, which is really powerful for the industry, is a better connection with the final customer, final investor.
Okay.
Because I think at the minute, finance, and as you said, how do I describe what I do to my friends and family? A lot of friends and family know a bit about finance, but they still, to be honest, I don't even try to explain it. It's quite good that they might listen to this podcast. It's complicated. It seems to be very sort of ephemeral out there. But
But
if we can use technology to start talking in the right languages, so to start engaging with people, you know, active investment is very much impact investment. So, you know, how do you want to use your money? Mm. Who do you want to lend your money? Do you want to lend your money to tobacco companies, or do you want to lend your money to companies that are going to be building infrastructure in the UK, or do you want to be building infrastructure in Africa? You can start having these thoughts, and that's on a personal decision. And maybe it's been very difficult to do that without technology. I mean, you send a letter to clients and they don't read it,
or precisely.
They
read an annual pension statement, to be honest, for most people is how much has it gone up and why are you charging me and to what degree. And you know, it's a lot of words, and it's always been written in very dense, very uneasily understandable language. And yet, as you're right, if you can say, well, in this fund, you have reduced or I don't know, a carbon reserves oil exposure by X percent, and that's equivalent to 4,000 cars, fewer cars on the road, you can put it in terms that people really understand and can see the effect that they are having with their money, because ultimately their pension is their largest investment in many cases.
Yeah, and you can do real things with it. You can have power. So not only explaining what we've done, but sort of asking questions, you know, what sort of funds would you like to buy in, rather than would you like to buy an all stocks FTSE tracker? I mean, who knows what that is?
Yes, exactly. But,
or would you, what sort of impact would you like to have on the world? And these are the types of things that you could have. These are the types of products that could be associated with. I think it's that language. I think technology will enable it.
Yep.
I'm not an expert on this whatsoever, but that's just, I imagine that's the direction that we're going to travel in.
So there's a lot more direct-to-consumer communications or through their advisor, through their pensions, and being very clear of, you know, to up until now, we have been this very removed party. And in your pension, you say, I have my pension with Legal & General Investment Management, say, but beyond that, I have no contact, to being a much more engaged part of their lives, but through the medium of technology.
Yeah, maybe they'll save more as well on that basis, which we all know that's people are living longer. The welfare state is stretched in the UK. You know, saving more is not also
exactly.
A bad
I mean,
thing.
With the advent of defined contribution, it matters so much more of investor communication statements, better engagement, and upping. Ultimately, trying to help people increase their contributions as well.
So you see, I'm bullish. Actually, there you go.
Not something that perhaps would have been associated with you before. Yeah. So you know, so that's the general trend. That seems to be a well-established trend in the market. What are the trends that you're seeing, either in markets or in asset management, that are kind of missed in your view? What's no one talking about?
It's so varied as finance that there's no such thing as no one talking about. So there's always going to be someone who discusses it. But I think that the issues around credit and the credit cycle, and the way that that's interacting with inequality and maybe a longer cycle that you would normally imagine from an economic cycle, I think that is underappreciated.
The longer-term view.
The way that credit has been building up and ultimately is weighing on growth. And that has to come to some sort of resolution. I think even people like me that worry about it are too not scared, but it's something that you don't want to bet on the end of the world. There's no point. You'll never be able. So trying to think of solutions for that is almost too much to consider. So it's those types of things that I think are underappreciated and need a little bit more thought. And I do think we'll start to develop, and we're already seeing rise of populism, all that sort of stuff. I think it's all related, and I think the connectivity is something that hasn't necessarily been appreciated by everyone.
Connectivity in terms of how companies are connected to each other, to their customers,
connectivity between the rise of increasing debt, and the rise of inequality, and the rise of populism. A lot of sort of geopolitical things. I mean, I think
which
if
are often
you
treated quite distinct from one another.
Yeah,
until now.
But I think there's something underneath that is generating an awful lot of momentum for a lot of these things, and that's the credit and that's debt cycle and that's Maybe I'm too focused on debt because that's always my background. But it does seem whenever you look at things, whenever you try, when push comes to shove, and the Greek guys and went bust in the last euro crisis. It came to a head basically because of credit, too much debt, because the banks were overlevered. That's the thing that really starts to push, and it has an impact on real people, as we saw in Greece, and that is going to be the case, I think, across a number of countries.
Thank you so much. I feel like that's a really good note to sum up on. So just before you go, Ben, what was the best thing you read last year?
So it's actually a competitor of sorts. So GMO, which is it's a hedge fund, so it's not really a competitor of ours. They do a quarterly newsletter, and there's a really great one about the environment, the race of our lives, which I think was in the summer. It's not that long, sort of 20 pages or so, but it just goes into incredible detail and analysis and behind global warming and what's going on there. And I think that's all to do, all links back to what I was saying about engaging with people and trying to get them feeling for what what might be an investment in the future if you really care about this sort of stuff. And, you know, my parents are the typical sort of older generation who perhaps are more sceptical about things like this. They just flatly don't believe in global warming. And I refused to have any conversation with them until they read this article. And it did change their views, not totally, but did change their views.
Yes.
So I would recommend reading this. Yeah, I would recommend reading this.
And your dream holiday destination?
Crikey. I burn at the slightest whiff of sun. So anything cool, like the mountains or something. Italian mountains, probably the best. Walking in the summer, because you get the view and you get the food, which you don't necessarily get in Germany.
Chill in the air as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Ben, for our series In Conversation With. Thank you for listening, and be sure to listen again for next in our series. Thanks to our wonderful production team and our producer, Holly McNulty. Thank you very much, and see you next week. Goodbye. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.